As a few of you have mentioned to me, something very nice happened to me this morning, and even though it doesn't seem to have any immediate relevance to what I'm talking about, if I don't fit it in, I won't be able to tell you about it. So I'm now going to tell you and then somehow make it relevant to what I'm talking about so that I can tell you, which is that the Wall Street Journal ran a very nice review of my book on King David. So if you have the Wall Street Journal at home, don't only look at the stocks. Go to the book review section, and right under the review about Napoleon is the review about my biography of King David. And now here's how I'm going to make it relevant to this morning's sermon. When I started to write the book, the one thing that I was determined to do was to look at David as a person. That is, in every situation in David's life, I tried to think not of some superhero who was constantly hearing messages from God, but how would a human being with all the flaws and all the conflicts and all the gifts and all the demerits of a human being react to this situation? And it occurred to me when I was looking at the Parsha this morning that if we do that with other biblical characters, it opens up both questions and some answers that we normally don't associate with people like Abraham, whom we think of in some sense as superheroes. Because if you think about Abraham's trajectory this morning, God says to him, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimolatcha u'mibeit avicha el ha'aretz asher ara'eka, which means go forth from your house, from the house of your father, from the place you were born, to the place that I will show you, and of course doesn't even tell him where that is. And normally we think how wonderful that Abraham does this. God calls him and he goes, and he takes with him Sarah and some great number of people, the Nefashot Asher Asu B'Chavran, which the rabbis tell us are all the people that Abraham brought under the Shekhinah, under the tent of God's presence. And then he goes and does all the things that Rabbi Fruithandler alluded to in his words to Joshua, our bar mitzvah this morning, all the things that make Abraham Abraham and make Sarah Sarah. But like all of you, I know many people in my life, and some of you are included in that, who are immigrants, or who have family who are immigrants. And the one thing that the Torah doesn't say about Abraham that all of you know is that when you're an immigrant, there's a certain sadness. Because even if you're running away from a terrible place, you're also running away from everything you grew up with and everything you know. And we don't usually think about Abraham that way. But the truth is, there must have been a part of Abraham and Sarah that was terribly sad. They lost their home, everybody they grew up with, everyone they knew, and they went far away where they didn't know a single soul. And I tried to put myself in Abraham's position, and I realized that the first thing that would occur to me, if God says, leave everything you know, your house, the house of your parents, the place where you were born, the culture you know, the first thing that I would feel is sad. And yet, throughout the story of Abraham, it never says that Abraham was sad. And this is consistent with the Torah's method of telling a story. It happens in the Torah occasionally that it will tell you what's going on inside people, but most of the time, it will describe the external action, what they do and what happens to them, and we have to gather from that what's going on inside of them. God says to Abraham, take your child up to the mountain to slaughter, and we don't know what Abraham feels. The Torah doesn't say. Abraham felt angry. Abraham felt sad. Abraham felt hurt. We have to assume, but the Torah doesn't tell us. And so I thought, how does Abraham deal with this sadness, with the dislocations of his life? How is it that he and Sarah together manage somehow to live successful and meaningful and purposeful lives, despite the fact that in the middle of their life, they were old enough at least to be married, God plucks them up from everything that they have known? And I think that we can get from the Torah essentially three characteristics of Abraham's life that tell us in our own lives how to deal with sadness. The first is something that the Torah says that we don't usually note, that we don't usually realize, in part because the rabbis sort of stole this realization from us. If you ask people, do you know anything about Abraham's father? Most people who have any idea about Abraham's father, Terach will tell you he was an idol maker. Right? And the story is that Abraham smashed his father's idols. We've heard that story. We learned it in religious school, but it's not in the Torah. The Torah doesn't say anything about Terach being an idol maker. But I'll tell you what the Torah does say about Terach. It says that he died in Haran. Now, why is that important? Because this is where Abraham started out, and this is where Abraham ended up. God says, Lech Lecha. Abraham starts out in Ur Kasdim. He goes along the Fertile Crescent. You'll just have to trust me here. Can't draw you a diagram. And he ends up here. Well, Haran is right here. In other words, for most of Abraham's journey, he journeyed with his parents. We don't normally think of it that way. We think of Abraham going all by himself. But the first thing, I think, that tells us about the blessing of overcoming sadness is those who are closest to you. Family, close friends, community. In other words, Abraham didn't have to go alone. And if you're going to take a journey, or if you're feeling sad for virtually any reason, part of the syndrome of sadness is you want to isolate yourself. And the Torah is telling us the opposite. That in fact, Abraham, who we think of as this isolated great figure of faith, even when he went on his journey, never went alone. He went with Sarah. He went with all those souls. And, believe it or not, he went with his parents. So the first principle is sadness loves aloneness, and sadness can be dispelled in community. The second principle is that Abraham always knew that his life was about more than Abraham. One of the things that sadness often is egocentric. I am sad because these things happened to me. One of the things that can bring us out of sadness is to be other-centric. To know that there are other things in the world to do. I would apply to sadness what C.S. Lewis said very beautifully about humility. He said, humility is not thinking less of yourself. Humility is thinking of yourself less. And the same thing here. Sadness is thinking less about yourself. One of the best cures of sadness is to do something for someone else. Because it gives you that sense of purpose and because you're making the world better for another human being. And that was, after all, the essence of Abraham's mission. The essence of Abraham's mission was, you're going to go to this place, but not ultimately for you alone. You're going to go to this place because there you will found a people. And that, I think, in some ways, is a third thing that Abraham teaches us about Sabbaths. Surely not the only. And that is that Abraham not only didn't live for himself in the time he was alive, but he didn't only live for himself, he lived for the future. He saw himself as part of a continuum. It wasn't only about, not only was it not only about him, it wasn't even only about his time. His lessons, his insistence on trying to have a child, God's blessing to him that you will be like the stars of the sky or the sands of the sea, and even more, everything that Abraham taught even to those who were not his biological children. Tell us that Abraham and Sarah had their eye fixed on the future. Because part of the pain of the immigrant is how much of the past they have lost. And for Abraham, and I think for many others, part of the cure is how much of the future they can influence. And so Abraham may have lost the culture of Ur Kasdim, but he created part of the culture of Israel. And of the two, as we know, Ur Kasdim fell into the dustbin of history. Nobody anymore walks around practicing the kind of culture that Abraham came from. But all over the world today, there are people reading the story of Abraham because of the culture that he and Sarah together managed to create. I think about this because it doesn't mean that Abraham was never sad. It doesn't mean that Abraham was never hurt. There is no perfect prescription to adjust human emotions to be the way we always want. But as you know, where you go and what you do influences how you feel. I don't know how you felt when you left your home this morning. But I promise you that in the course of being in synagogue, the experiences you had, the people you spoke to, the words you read in the Siddur, the connection you felt to the community and God, your mood didn't stay on one plane. Because what you do changes how you feel and ultimately who you are. So when God says to Abraham, Lech Lecha, that double meaning has, I think, one of the most profound lessons of the Jewish tradition. We know that the Hasidic rabbis say, Lech Lecha, you go, also means go to yourself. That every outward journey is also an inward journey. But it's true in this sense as well. That is, that when you do things in the world, it changes the way you feel. Bakasha. That when you do things in the world, it changes the way you feel, what goes on inside of you, and how you look at the world. So when we read the Torah, if we see our ancestors as people, and we understand the lessons of how they sought to deal with their lives, we will realize that the one thing that has not changed is human nature. And the joy and tragedy and happiness and sadness were experienced by our precursors as they are today. And we can learn from Abraham that if we do what matters and we're surrounded by people who care for us and we care for them back and we realize that our lives are about more than ourselves, then we can overcome sometimes the sadness that life inevitably brings. And we can feel what our rabbis call the simcha shel mitzvah, the joy, the satisfaction, the elevation of soul in doing the mitzvot that God has given us so that we might lead not only happy lives, but good ones as well. Shabbat shalom.